Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mod Pod with Fukunaga,
a podcast that celebrates the strength and pulse of the luxury market. And now, here's your host, Vanessa Fukunaga.
And today's special guest star is the one and only Dr. Raul Rincon Navarro. I would just call you Dr. Rincon.
Yeah, of course.
He's my doctor, too. Fixed me. We were together on Christmas.
Yeah.
That was sad.
But a lovely night.
A lovely night. What are a couple fractured ribs between friends? So would that be kind of a normal, you were on call, or will you just lie to me and tell me that you came especially for me?
No, actually, yes. I only came to see you, of course. Yeah.
Come on. That's the good special treatment.
No, actually, they didn't call me from the ER. They didn't call me directly. It was through another colleague. Hey, can you take a look at Vanessa?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Do you see the medical care here? He is. And I'm going to read because, not gonna, going to read because, first of all, you look like a baby.
Thank you. Every time I see a patient, you know.
They tell you that you look like a baby. And then I have to make sure that I'm saying you're a certified neurosurgeon, founder, owner of the Neurospine and Pain Clinic for Los Cabos.
Yes.
How did you become a neurosurgeon and spine surgeon? What is insanity?
Well, you know, actually, there's a couple of stories behind that. One is my father is a neurosurgeon also, so there's an influence.
Runs in the family.
Yeah, there's an influence already. So the first approach I had to the medicine, to the medical area, when I was around 15 years old, he took me to the operating room and, okay, you want to become a doctor? Okay, this is a brain surgery. And I fell in love. You know, at that moment, I said, that's magic.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you why it's magic. Because I saw the patient before the surgery who was, you know, he couldn't speak, he couldn't move. He was like in a comatose state. And after surgery, he woke up, started to move.
Oh,
so that was like a miracle.
It is a miracle.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing that you can... that you're that knowledgeable or that people are that knowledgeable or skilled that can perform those kinds of operations.
Yes.
Do you believe, well, before we get started, we always have a little beverage. Today, we're doing mocktails.
Okay.
Mocktails because he has appointments after. I told him he could have canceled them. Now, tell me, so your first introduction to, so your dad was a neurosurgeon?
Yes.
So growing up, was he, you were already kind of used to the life of a doctor?
Yeah.
Was it kind of holidays, nights, weekends? It's not a 9-to-5-er. How was it when you were even just, you know, growing up?
Actually, that's, you know, that part of the life is as a doctor, as a specialist in my field. Well, the family knows that you're not going to be around a lot of time because someone is going to call from the emergency room. Or just the surgeries might take up to 8-10 hours. So, yeah, it's a little probably frustrating for the family.
But when you're little, how did you start to realize that he was really a doctor, what he did?
You asked me why to choose neurosurgery.
Uh-huh.
And there was two issues. One is my father's a neurosurgeon, but also when I was 3 years old, I had an accident. I had a pencil, you know, going into my, just above my eyeball, getting into the brain.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got a surgery when I was 3 years old.
Oh, my
gosh.
So
that was actually my first, you know, what experience with the neurosurgery and with an operating room as a patient.
Did your dad do it?
No.
Your surgery? Are you allowed to perform surgery on family?
You know, there's no legal thing that actually restricts for that, but it's more like a moral or ethical kind of thing because, I mean, I couldn't manage. I mean, if I'm the only option, of course, I will try to do it myself to save the life.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are some other colleagues that can do it, that's the best way to go because what if I, for example, if my dad decides to perform the surgery and I die,
oh my
it's
God.
Going to be like guilty the rest of his life.
Right.
And yeah, it's not all.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
So when you're growing up, where did you grow up?
In Guadalajara.
Guadalajara,
the mariachi and tequila.
Exactly. And how long were you there? You studied there?
I studied medicine there, yes. And then I moved to Mexico City for neurosurgical residence.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, big cities.
2 years ago, because again, you look like a baby. And you started the first and only actual, it's what, the neuro spine and pain clinic. The only one that's here in Los Cabos.
The state.
Oh, in the state.
In the state is the only one. Yeah.
Wow.
And to be honest, you know, this is a concept. It's a comprehensive healthcare clinic, let's say. Yeah. But it's more focused on U.S. based clinics. And actually, they're really rare. Those kind of comprehensive clinics based or focused on the spine. It's not a common thing. It's actually very rare. And here in Mexico, it's only a few of them that, you know, we integrate not only the neurosurgical spine surgery, but also algologist, the pain specialist, rehabilitation, nutritionist, psychologist, neurologist. I mean, all a whole team for the patients.
I mean, I do know that, although I haven't been to the psychologist yet. maybe that's my problem. But we were talking when I had that bike accident and I fractured my ribs. I've already been to your other team members that are doing the other treatments for me to help my bones fuse better together. Yep. But, you know, there is a psychological aspect to it.
Yes.
There really is, because I don't want to. So I want to be careful, but I don't want to go on a bike again right now. Or probably ever. I don't know. But there is this weird psychological aspect to it. So it's interesting that you provide that whole holistic approach. You have something on your website that says something like, we don't know the absolute truth, but we will do absolutely everything in our power to improve the quality of the lives of our patients.
Yes.
I mean, it's really powerful, because you can only do so much, and then don't you think the human body has to take over at some point? I'm talking as if I'm a doctor, but,
but I
think it's good to admit almost you may not have every answer, but you're going to do everything in your power to help. To help the quality of the lives of your patients, I mean, that's
really, you know,
powerful.
Yes. It's very, very important in this field, in any, you know, any field, ethics, it's very, very important. But talking about medicine or, you know, the healthcare, ethics is not only an option. It has to be on the table all the time. And part of that is to be honest with the patient. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know what? I don't know what the problem is, but we can, you know, we do some research. We can connect with some other colleagues. I have colleagues, good friends worldwide on the spine field or neurological care, etc. Also my colleagues. So we can do something, you know, for this patient. And that's something those words you said, that's something I truly believe.
No, I can see that. I mean, creating that center and pain is, it's, you know, it's not even just performing the surgery, whatever, if somebody has an accident or a stroke or whatever it is, you know, there, that aftercare, that healing process, and you have a nutritionist there as well.
Yes.
I mean, healing people from the inside out, also mentally, right? It's really important. I really don't even know of a clinic like that. I'm sure there are, but in the States, and for sure, like you said, not in the state at all here.
Yes. No. Just to complete that about the mental status with the patient. For example, a patient suffering chronic pain. There's a link, a very, very close relationship in between chronic pain and depression, anxiety, and the brain. They make these connections in the center that, you know, that takes all the pain and also the depression, anxiety. They are they're together. So they start to make connections in between.
Interesting.
Yes. So it's in at least 50% of the patients suffering chronic pain, they're going to develop anxiety and depression. And the patients with depression, they're going to, you know, that is going to trigger their pain in 50% just to start. And also there's that situation, a patient suffering chronic pain or something that, for example, what you experienced, a fall, an accident, okay, that leads to something called kinesiophobia, you know, the fear of moving or doing something.
It's true.
Because, and that happens in 45% of the patients.
It's very true. It's really mental.
Yes, because, I mean, that is, I don't want to go through that again because that caused me, that harmed me or something.
Mm-hmm. So. And how long have you had your practice here? Since 2016?
No, since 2014, actually.
Oh, 14. Yes, so yes. Why did you move from Mexico City to Cabo?
At that time, I was already working in Guadalajara.
Mm-hmm.
After the neurosurgical residence in Mexico City, I performed the minimally invasive spine surgery fellowship in Frankfurt, Germany. And then I was already working in Guadalajara. At the big hospitals, you know, with a lot of patients, etc., and also my private practice. And I had no time to see my wife at all, like getting at
home. So how'd you make two kids?
Oh, those were actually here. No, but yeah, well, you find the time.
Exactly.
So the thing is that I was already into that, you know, that cycle. No time, really, like frustrated. Working at the public health system is really tiring, you know, like especially after COVID or during and after COVID, healthcare is really, really burned out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but before it was already that. I mean, without the proper equipment, etc. So I was looking for some other places to move. And I knew Cabo since 2012. I came and see, this is beautiful. But there was no, you know, an infrastructure like a hospital in order to perform those kind of surgeries I perform.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, at that time, no, it was not the proper time.
Mm-hmm.
But after, when I was in that area, in that time in 2016, when I decided to move here, because I saw there was a new hospital, new brand hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I called, do you have a neurosurgeon? No, we don't. There's a neurosurgeon coming from La Paz sometimes for an emergency or from Guadalajara, Mexico City, but there's no a local neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I came to visit in October 16. And then that day, they made the tour into the hospital, and I say, okay, it's a really nice hospital. That night, Vanessa, it's like, yeah, God, what do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
God, destiny, life, whatever. I want to believe it was God telling me, yes, you have to be there. Because that night, the medical director calls me. Dr. Rincon, you're just visiting, but there's a head trauma. Could you see the patient? Yeah, of course. I was there in 5 minutes. Required, an emergency decompression of the brain because of a blood clot. So it was like, okay, that was a sign for me, to there's a need for a neurosurgeon here in Cabo. So I was, okay, we're done in Guadalajara. Let's move to Cabo.
Oh, my gosh. And you can still salsa dance here and perform all
of
your surgeries.
Why not?
Oh, I mean, it's my gosh.
Cabo, yes.
What a story.
Yeah.
And how's the person today?
Oh, he's working. I mean, I hope he's
recovered,
still...
recovered.
Yeah, he's
obviously.
Recovered, yes.
Uh-huh.
He's fully, I saw him like a year after, and he was doing very well. Thanks God.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But how did you get your team together? Did you pull people from other areas you already knew? How did you pull it all together?
Well, I have, you know, the project in my mind is in my mind since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I have the project written, the logo. I designed the logo, by the way. It's the DN from the neurospine. It's actually It's the R from Rincon and the N Navarro. It's a combination of the yeah. So
clever.
It's yeah.
You're so creative as well. I like it.
When I decided to open the clinic, yes, I needed you know, people who also aligns with my values as a doctor and as a person. So yes, I was looking for that people specifically. And that's, to be honest, that is actually why the NSP clinic is successful, because of the people that forms the clinic.
And so when did it actually open? When was your first, do you remember your first day?
In November 19.
Okay.
And then, because we were planning to open in around March, April 2020, and then
pandemic.
Everything is stopped. I was really concerned because I have some really expensive equipment. Fortunately, we could open till November 2020. Yes. So, yeah, we opened the first patients. And to be honest, it has been a really success. So we are actually 2 years, almost 3 years, let's say, in this this November, we opened the doors. But we're moving in a month. We're moving to another
big...
They're in Coral, but
okay.
You know where it was in Manoma?
Yes.
Upstairs at the fifth floor.
Okay.
We're moving there.
Okay.
So it's going to be bigger.
So I have to book my next appointment.
Exactly. So it's bigger.
Not with the psychologist.
With the whole team.
Maybe with the whole team.
The whole team. Why not? You know, a conference room for Vanessa.
It takes a village. Good for you that you have to move because you're growing so much. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And so how do you find your business life versus the personal life versus the medical life balance?
Well,
really easy, right?
It's not easy at all. Yes. I think that one definitely, you know, the support, talking about the family area, it's my wife, of course. She understands. She comes also, she's a medical doctor also, a nutritionist. She's really into nutrition. She tries to, you know, put me fit. Sometimes I cannot say to a chicharrón, a taco de chicharrón, but things like that. But she comes also from a doctor's family of doctors. So she's she knows how
she
it is.
She gets it.
Yeah. And I think she has been really supportive since the beginning, when I told her, you know what, let's move to Cabo. And she said, go ahead. I mean, I trust in you. I believe in you. So let's go ahead. And with the kids, that's one of the, you know, the majors. I have two kids, 4 and 6 years old. And they are back there in Picacho. It's the school, my work, hospital, and home. We live 5 minutes ago, so away. So it's... it's really, really close. So I have the perfect time to spend with them at mornings and to take them at school. And then at the noon, for example, to have meals with them. Sometimes I actually pick them up from the school and things like that. So I can, we have managed that.
That's really nice. Yeah. That's what you were kind of looking for.
Yes, exactly.
Coming here.
Yeah.
I know you travel all over the place. You've been asked to speak at many, many congresses.
Yes.
I won't be able to name them all, but I know it's like probably all over the U.S., Nepal, Indonesia, Germany. Yeah. You were just in Madrid.
Yes.
Just why I can't get an appointment with you. But it's pretty impressive to be speaking at all of these congresses.
Yeah. When I decided to move from the big hospital, big city in Guadalajara, some colleagues told me, oh, but you are going to Cabo. It's a small place. How are you going to manage that? And I don't know. I mean, we'll figure it out. And, you know, things happen. And they just go happening and happening. And they invite me, colleagues from some other places, they invite me to lecture about mostly spine surgery, of course, about endoscopic or arthroplasty. That's what I mostly performed.
What does that mean? Tell us.
Endoscopic is through a small incision, for example, a 9 millimeters incision.
Okay.
I get with the camera into the spine to remove for example, a herniated disc.
Okay.
Traditionally, it was like a big surgery and recovery, even harder than the problem itself.
Mm-hmm.
But endoscopic permits me to get into the canal where the nerves are and mm-hmm. the disc, remove that part of the disc and seal it with the laser, and the patient walks out of the hospital immediately.
Oh, so, my gosh. Yeah. And you take a really conservative approach.
Yes.
To, I'm going to say healing, but to how you treat your patients. How would you describe that? When you say it's a, because I know that, but how would you describe that? Somebody comes in with a bunch of pain. How do you approach that with them?
Yeah, well, it's very important. It's actually my personal and professional philosophy, but also the clinics. I have transmitted that to the clinic, that we need to first focus on the patient's needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important. And also to customize the care, okay? For example, talking about budget. Not all the patients can pay, you know, all the treatments
mm-hmm.
or something. So, we can do this and we can do that in order to enhance the
quality of life for your patients.
Yes, totally.
That's amazing.
Yes. So, but the conservative is basically based in physical therapy, for example.
Okay.
We have the clinic, we have something really highly sophisticated devices like a robotic laser, magnetic stimulation, things like that, that
uh-huh.
enhances the recovery process for the tissues. Also, we have something called a TMS. Here in Mexico, it's only a few places that has one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the U.S., very rare to have, mm-hmm. specifically in neurological and psychiatrist units, because that's the TMS. What does is to stimulate the brain cortex in a non-invasive way
mm-hmm.
for treating depression, anxiety, insomnia, a lot of things. You know, a patient with a stroke enhances the recovery process of the brain. And there's, you know, FDA-approved treatment with the TMS, the transcranial magnetic stimulation,
mm-hmm.
for severe depression that patients that takes like 4 or 6 medications and still have suicidal ideations and mm-hmm. things like that. So they go for the TMS and they are like done. They're cured. Okay. So
how do you get this word out? Because it feels, other than something like this, this feels really important, because if people can stop taking medications, or obviously they can be healed in a more natural or organic way with their own stimulation of their body, how are you getting this out to the world?
A lot of doctors,
mm-hmm.
medical doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, neurologists, don't know about TMS.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, cutting-edge technology.
Mm-hmm.
But then we start to, okay, we did a webinar like 2 years ago about this, and we invited some other colleagues from Cabo, and you know, TMS is this and that.
Mm-hmm.
No, that is not, that doesn't work, because they thought it was, you know, magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
And not the therapy itself,
mm-hmm.
but magnetism is like, yeah, like charades, like, or it does not help
mm-hmm.
at all. It's not a therapeutic issue, but TMS is. It's a big machine, you know, that stimulates the brain directly. But it's been hard when, you know, with the colleagues. We're getting to the point that actually patients coming from Canada, from the U.S.,
yes.
or some other places, they come because they know the treatment, but they know the device. The thing with the TMS is several sessions during a month.
Mm-hmm.
So like 2-3 sessions a week, things like that. So that's why patients have to come and stay for around 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, or buy a house.
Yeah, why not?
Buy a house with us. Exactly. But speaking of that, do you find a lot of medical tourism? You're getting a lot of people flying in just to see you and for these
yes.
specific types of treatments?
Yes, this is something.
This is major.
When I decided to move to Cabo, that's one of my goals to.
My gosh.
To get into the medical tourism because I saw the need not only for locals, but
yes.
By the way, you know, one of the things is like, if you want to build a community, you have to also obviously take care of all the, you know, like a sphere to take all the aspects, all the areas, mm-hmm. including healthcare. Mm-hmm. Why there was not a good healthcare system, like mm-hmm. not those hospitals that you get and your you know, your pocket gets drained or the insurance gets like, no, mm-hmm. it's really good healthcare, quality healthcare that you can get anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my goal.
That is so interesting. Yeah. We have to get this out, and we are, to all of our audience, because I mean, how interesting would it be for you to? I know you, so this is kind of like I'm a little bit flabbergasted because I've never heard of this technology. I didn't know it was. It's interesting. Obviously, you're the expert, but that how all of those things are interrelated and how it can, you know, your anxiety manifests itself in different ways with pain yes. in the body or vice versa. You can be very depressed because you're in pain all the time, but it's probably a never ending
yes,
cycle.
Exactly.
How interesting.
It is indeed.
You are fascinating.
No, you are. You are.
Oh my gosh. And he can salsa. And he can salsa. Oh
yes.
My gosh.
Yes.
How do you, so speaking of being fit, and your surgeries are 8 to 10 hours, how do you recover? How do you actually train for that? Because I'm going to make this up. You're here. Well, you're a lefty.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that mean also, I have two questions.
Yes.
How do you train for that? How do you keep yourself fit?
Well, I try to, you know, it's important to keep as healthy as possible, uh-huh. Talking about nutrition, mm-hmm. of course. That's the base, you know. It's very important to give the importance to nutrition. What you
Is this a hint?
Get, yeah. No, but...
Fine. Hold on. Let me have my yeah. mocktail. We're talking about nutrition.
Yeah, but I mean...
But
in
it
general,
is true.
In general.
From the inside out.
Yeah, exactly. What you get to your body. It's talking about the omegas, for example, talking about zinc, vitamin D, that kind of things that your body needs. Creatine, for example, glucosamine, because your muscles need that those substances to get stronger, okay,
mm-hmm.
to recover faster.
Hold on, we got to write that down.
Yeah.
Creatine, what is that? What do I need to be buying? Hold on. Since I have you, you know I'll have a full-on free consultation later. Okay. But it.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But, and you talk to your patients about all of this.
Yeah, yeah,
And
totally.
Do you find that, do you take supplements?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Every day, yes.
You do?
Yeah, I take like 10 pills, omegas.
I have to see if I'm taking the same. Yes, keep going. Okay, I take omega.
The zinc, the Q10.
I don't take zinc.
No. It's good for the, you know, the immune system mainly.
True. Okay, yeah. So vitamin
yeah.
C?
Vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, because...
That's why you look like a baby. The vitamin E, and you're probably going to say biotin. I take biotin to try to help
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And collagen with the powder.
Do you think that works?
Yes. Yeah, that does. It does, yes.
Lupita, as I usually say, it needs to go on the list. We need to double our order.
One
Interesting.
Yeah, and creatine, glucosamine.
Okay.
That kind of things. It's important for the body, but okay, if you take that, but also you take your creatine with a glass of Coke, for example,
mm-hmm.
it's like, no way, it is not the way to do that.
So are you, do you eat generally clean? If you had to go out for a meal, let's say we're at Las Ventanas, like we are, sponsored by La Boutique, thank you very much. And you're going out, what would be your meal of choice?
But around this time, for example...
Yeah, we're not going to feed you.
No.
And did you see, now I feel bad because we have a bunch of... They're protein bars and I think banana
that's
chips.
That's why I had a... I love sushi, for example.
Okay.
I love sushi.
Okay.
Fresh fish, things like that. Tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh tuna is like amazing. Yeah, there are some places...
And we get
places,
that here everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's like... But on the other hand, not to, you know, that because of the mercury, that the big fishes like the tuna, that kind of things, they have a lot of amount of mercury, so you have to also take care of that. So it's recommended as small fishes.
We're never going to dinner together because I'm completely, yes, I'm going to say back salad, off, I'm going to have my tuna my Teddy Grahams.
No, yeah, but for example, I avoid to get carbs at night.
Why?
And also because, especially, well, it depends also the quality, yes, but also the what kind of carbs, for example.
Right.
If it's a complex carb,
whole grain.
Sweet potato.
Uh-huh. I love sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
But why do you avoid them at night? Because of the digestive system?
It's going to trigger the
insulin?
Yeah, the insulin. Yeah.
Did you see that? I'm not even a doctor.
No, it's going to increase the glucose, so that is going to trigger the insulin release. So then that is the one that actually gets deposited around your, you know, the belly area into the organs and things like that. So, yeah.
Do you work out every day?
I try to, probably not every day, like probably in a week, like 4 or 5 days, depending on my, you know, my daily activities. But yeah, I try to, yes.
And we're talking about stamina for these, 8 to 10 hour surgeries, or I don't know how you do it as a doctor, forget even surgery, but when you're on call and you have to stay up for how long? 48 hours?
Yeah.
I don't know. 72 hours. how do you do that? How do you, because at there's at some point where you also have to regulate yourself.
Yes.
I'm trying to be into your holistic everything and regulate myself. How do you do that as a doctor? What do you do?
Well, it's actually, you know, when you have to do that, like being awake for hours and hours, that was mainly in my residency. When I was becoming a neurosurgeon. But fortunately, those days ended because it's really, you know, exhaustive for the body. Like, taking the limits beyond. So at this time, it's important once you grow up also and start to find out that you have to take care of yourself and the cardio and things like that. So it's very, very important. But for example, when I'm in a surgery, 8 to 10 hours, fortunately, those are the least I perform, I mean, with that duration. Most of the surgeries, it takes around 3 or 4 hours. But I have, really complex cases. The longest surgery I've had is 17 hours. So it's really, during the surgery, and this is very curious, during the surgery, you don't feel tired, you don't feel hungry, you don't want to go to pee or anything like that. But just, I mean, you're really into that, into what you're doing. And time passes by, and when once it finishes and you're done, it's like, boom, it's like you feel drained, like really, really tired. And that tiredness probably stays like 2-3 days after.
What do you do to recover?
Once I get at home, I get a glass of whiskey. Yeah.
Oh, you can have whiskey when you're at home, but we have to have mocktails today.
Yeah.
Now, really?
But once I get home.
But there's not, that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing to like,
to
which
relax.
Whiskey do you like?
The single malt, for example.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Malt, I have no idea.
Column
okay.
Or things like that. But yeah, in order to, because you are with all the adrenaline to the top. So it's, I cannot get to bed, for example, just after surgery. I need to go like calm down. It's like if you were racing or something,
right?
You know, obviously you're in this position,
yes,
right? But or
do you stretch? Do you take a hot shower? How do you physically? Are you by yourself? Do you want to talk to anybody?
Normally I don't. But when there are complex cases where the patient is not doing well, for example, I talk with my dad. For example, my colleague and my support in that field, you know.
And where is he? Is he here?
No, he's in Guadalajara, Michoacan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's in that area.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you consult with him a lot?
I perform surgeries when he gets spine patients, let's say. He consults me, hey, what do you think about this? And then I go to perform the surgery, yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah. How incredibly proud must he be to be performing surgery side by side with his son?
Yeah. The first surgery we performed together, and I was trying to do things my way, and he was trying to do his way.
Uh-huh.
So we were like, it was not very, you know, like very fluent at the beginning, but then he said, okay, you're the expert in the spine, you do the surgery. And since then, it was like...
Is it purposeful to keep, because I'm only saying this because of TV and movies, but it feels like a kind of what you were just saying with your dad, to keep the atmosphere light during an operation?
Yes.
I mean, obviously the patient is under...
Yes.
Do you, I'm going to say give them last words, but do you talk to them about what their mental status should be, you know, to be going in very happy and positive before they go under? And then what is it like for you, and how do you kind of manage your ambiance in an operating room?
Oh, well, this is something I like to do with the patient before getting under anesthesia. I ask, which is your favorite music, or do you have a favorite song or something? So we play it, and we have already some patients that day or day before or something around the birthday. So we sing the mañanitas and things like that. And so that makes the experience less, you know,
intense.
Yeah. So
is it
softer.
For you? Do you believe that when you're under anesthesia, first of all, I think it is beyond amazing that man or somebody has created a medicine that can put the body in a state where you're not feeling the pain of some sort of surgery. I don't know how any of it works, but it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
What do you think is are people soaking in the vibe and the ambiance of the operating room? Is that part of why you keep it light in there?
Totally, yes.
Uh-huh.
Actually, there's one of my doctor in my team, the Dr. Alondra. She is the algologist. She is, for being an algologist, you have to be an anesthesiologist and then perform a subspecialty in pain medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So she performed a study about how the patient behaves, you know, comparing the patients that got music during surgery, like what kind of music they got, okay, during surgery, if it was something that the patient liked, and how the, you know, the parameters, the vital signs during surgery, and the pasta when the patient awakes and things like that. And that was actually favored for the patients that liked the music during the surgery.
What is it actually doing to you? What you're not asleep. Explain to us, because now I'm fascinated.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, those are narcotics that takes you to the place that you are pretty much, it's sleeping, inducing the sleepiness, okay? It's the induction of you to sleep, but in the deepest plane.
Uh-huh.
When you are totally, totally disconnected, let's say. Because during the sleep, there are several, you know...
cycles.
Yeah, exactly. So one of them is when you are totally, totally disconnected, and there's where the anesthesia takes you, like very, very fast. Like really fast. Count to 10.
Sounds wonderful tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the ambiance part for you guys as the medical team in the operating room, as well as for the patient?
Yes. There's, you know, if you are relaxed as a surgeon, or the people around you, if they feel relaxed, confident about what they're doing, obviously it's going to be reflected on the patient's experience and results.
Your life is going great. Apparently, because you're able to, I don't know how you'd only drink coffee in the morning, but be with your kids in the morning, pick them up from school or have lunch. That's actually a really nice life and be able to have a really successful practice that will grow. I mean, I can't quite get over what a change in the world that technology that you have could really bring. And especially, I mean, I know we're all sick of talking about the pandemic, but it did bring on a lot of depression for everybody. Or knock doctors, but a lot of times I think an easy path might be to prescribe medicine rather than take a more holistic, conservative approach. I just think it's really interesting that you're doing that. We've really got to get that out to even more people.
Yep.
And then they'll fly to Cabo, and then they'll buy houses,
exactly.
And then you'll have more patients. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
It is. What do you see? How do you see your next couple of years, in the next 5 years?
Well, back there, growing at the clinic, for example, to have more, the more constant patients flow overseas, but also. One of my projects, one of my goals is to have a foundation that we can actually help, for the patients that don't have the money.
Can't afford it.
Yeah. So we're working on that in order to, it takes time, the process. But yeah, that's one of my goals, to have a foundation to help the people that have to wait not months, years to get a medical assistance for a brain tumor, for things like that. Not only kids, but also adults.
Uh-huh. Well, anything we can do to help.
Oh, thank you.
There are a lot of very philanthropic people here. We know a lot of people. We're highly connected. And I think people are really generous and they want to help. And I don't even, they're very philanthropic already with a lot of different foundations, but I think that people don't even realize it. People are suffering and don't necessarily have the means or the money for a real necessary surgery that isn't that, I don't say life-threatening, but it's life-threatening in that they're not able to earn money to sustain a household.
Yep. Yeah, another goal is to have a very well-equipped OR for the kind of surgeries I perform, talking about a robotic spine. There's a robot for the spine surgery, but that
and
is
who
more
needs
fat.
You?
Well,
just kidding. I'm kidding. To play the music.
to dance salsa.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Can you dance salsa? Can I dance salsa? Okay. I can't get over it. Okay. Sorry. That is so funny.
Yeah,
so there's a robotic.
Yeah, there's a robotic spine surgery.
Well, let's get it. That feels like a boomerang and a TikTok ready to happen.
Yeah. Imagine that.
You mentioned that you're also a left-handed,
yes.
A lefty.
Yeah.
Do you think that creativity, has that come into play during any of your surgeries? Because nothing can possibly be cookie cutter.
Yeah.
You must have to be able to pivot or get creative in some surgeries to ensure that the person lives and has a better quality of life. Do you find that creative aspect comes into play at all, or are you just very...
No, actually, yes. Once I get, the patient gets to my office and I get the problem, the symptoms and the physical examination, what is the problem, then I see the images and I say, okay, we can do this, we can do that, but there are some, not the operate at the operating room, but before that, it's like planning the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work behind that to plan what is the best approach to do this. For example, at the spine or the brain tumor, things like that. There's a patient from La Paz that she had a brain tumor in a specific location. That actually had to do with the movements of the mobility of the arm and the leg on the opposite side.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the brain, it works like that. If this is affected on the left side, it affects the right side. Brain anatomy 1.1.
All right, you don't have to say that when I just say it's just interesting and I didn't know.
So... that was the situation with this patient, you know. Uh-huh. And but to remove that tumor was, okay, if we remove that tumor completely, this patient is not going to be able to move.
Okay.
Okay, so what did we do to keep the patient awake during the surgery? Yeah. So at some point during the surgery, once I get the, you know, the window at the skull, the bone, and I open this layer covering the brain, then wake up the patient, and they will start to stimulate the cortex in order to see if that specific area was causing the movement. If we start to see that, okay, that is, you know, causing this or the speech, things like that, then we go some other way. And we have done that here at the Ash Plus.
Oh,
at the hospital.
My gosh.
Yeah.
When you're doing the planning and you are preparing for surgery, how far in advance are you usually doing that?
Most of the times are elective surgeries.
Uh-huh.
But when we have, you know, emergency cases, you have to think really fast.
On your feet.
Yeah. It's like, okay, there's a head trauma, there's a blood clot, we have to remove that. Mm-hmm. We're going to approach that. But if there's not only head trauma, but if there's also a fracture on the leg, for example, or something, abdomen, bleeding. So it's, you have to first think, okay, first is to preserve life in an emergency situation, preserve life, then preserve the function.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, unfortunately, the last is to preserve aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, those are the way to think when there's an emergency. But you have to act really, really fast. Yeah.
What advice would you give to young doctors or people that want to get into the medical field that they should kind of keep with them as they study, as they create their own businesses, as they treat patients? What would that message be?
Definitely to be humble, to be ethics, to be ethic. That's the, you know, the cornerstone of the practice, of the medical practice, has to be. Not on the past, not now, and probably, but every time, to be ethic in your practice. Not to look for the money. Money will get there, okay? But if you do things because of the patient's needs, that is the goal, okay? If once, obviously, you start doing that, and the rest will come by its own.
Dr. Raul Rincon Navarro, founder, owner, chief, amazing person. Seriously, from the inside out, if I heard you say the word ethics and being ethical one more time and how that's the foundation for your life and how you have that as your vision and your mission for yourself, your family, and your business, and as advice to, you know, young doctors or medical students that are out there, I think that is pretty amazing. And I think that applies to everybody, but really in the medical field, I salute you. Thank you so much
for your
help.
Oh, thank you.
I hope not to see you next Christmas in the ER, but thank you for everything. This has been amazing. So Dr. Raul Rincon Navarro from the Neuron Spine Clinic right here in Los Cabos, and salute to you.
Salud, Vanessa.
Two salutes to your health and más éxito.
Muchas gracias.
Salud, everyone.
Salud.
And to see this and all of your favorite episodes of Mod Pod with Fukunaga, check all of your favorite podcast channels.
Thanks for listening to Mod Pod with Fukunaga. Follow the episodes on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and many more.